for today, I want to continue with a tshuva from Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein. And if by chance you have the text, we're on page 9. If you don't have the text, I'll try to summarize the highlights as we go along. Reuven is very ill with corona, and it's Erev Pesach. His family members bring him outstanding matzahs, matzot mehudarot. In the meantime, during the hours between Erev Pesach and Pesach, Reuven's situation deteriorates, and he's in a comatose state. There's no way he could eat the matzahs. He's sharing the hospital room with another corona patient by the name of Shimon. Shimon is capable of eating matzah on the night of Pesach, but he has no matzahs. And Shimon calls Rav Zilberstein to ask him if he's allowed to take the matzos that belong to Reuven, seeing that Reuven will not be able to eat those matzahs. And of course, the first question we have to ask is, isn't he guilty of theft if he takes those matzahs? But secondly, even if we would somehow resolve the problem of theft, we have an additional problem, and that is that matzah, based on an equation to lulav, requires lachem. So it's not enough that you somehow circumvent the issue of gzela, of theft. You also have to acquire ownership over the matzah. So for example, if I invite you to my Seder table, you acquire ownership over the matzah by eating the matzah, let's say. Well, perhaps that could be an answer to this question. I don't know. But first and foremost, we have to ask the question of gzela. And Rav Zilberstein says that this question is analogous to another question with regard to lulav. And a person bought a lulav before Sukkos, and he had some sort of a stroke, lo aleinu, he is unconscious. And the question that was asked in the case of Esrog was whether or not the members of his family would be allowed to take his Esrog on the first day of Yom Tov without permission. And in the case of Esrog, the Torah says, L'kachtem lachem, the lulav of the Esrog has to be yours. How would the members of his family acquire ownership over the lulav that belongs to their father, and their father's in a comatose state? Now, when we talk about members of the family, we have to subdivide them into two different categories. One is called Samach al Shulchan Aviv, and the other is Eino Samach al Shulchan Aviv. So the younger children and the young adults are dependent upon their father who is supporting them. That's called Samach al Shulchan Aviv. There are other children who are married already, they have their own households, and they are financially independent. Now, in the case of Samach al Shulchan Aviv, the younger children, there we have a concept called Tfusas Habayis, which means that whatever is necessary for the entire family is purchased by the father, by the mother, on behalf of the entire family. And therefore this lulav belongs to the entire bayis. And that's as far as Samach al Shulchan Aviv. Those who are dependent financially on their parents are part of this magical entity, or shall we call it, almost like a company called the family company. ink, and everything belongs to the entire family. What about the older children? Because if we're going to make an equation here between this case and the Corona case, we're going to be talking about older children. Obviously, Shimon, who shares the room with Reuven, is not Samach al Shulchan Reuven. He's not being supported, or he's not financially dependent upon Reuven. So here we have a brilliant insight, a revolution of sorts. I call it halachic magic from the Aruch HaShulchan. His name was Epstein. He lived approximately 120 years ago. Well, maybe I would have said that in my youth. Maybe by now it's 150 years ago. Anyway, the Aruch HaShulchan. I don't know if any of you have heard of one of the great rabbis in America. He's not alive a long time. He's gone, Rav Henkin. Rav Henkin considered the Aruch HaShulchan to be the greatest Rav of the entire generation. Anyway, the Aruch HaShulchan writes the following. As far as Bonav HaGedolim VeChasanov, he says that with regard to his older children and his sons-in-law, do we say A or B? And we'll see how the Aruch HaShulchan is machriya in this stuff. He says, do we say A, Tzorech Echad, Kol Echad, Midina Lulav Bifnei Atzmo, each one has to have his own personal private ownership of the Lulav, O Dilma, or shall we say, that maybe we can extend the halacha of Samach al Shulchan Aviv and somehow magically apply that principle even to Banav HaGdolim. And he suggests that if we could do so, then these older children and sons-in-law become also batel to the father. They don't need their own special kinyan on the esrog in order to acquire ownership. And Rav Zilbershin asks, how could the Aruch HaShulchan extend this halacha to the older children, as if to say they don't need to make their own acquisition over the esrog? How is that possible? And he quotes a Gemara in Sukkah to base his question and his objection to the Aruch HaShulchan. The Gemara in Sukkah says that a person on the first day of Sukkot should make sure that he makes a kinyan first and fulfills his mitzvah of lulav, and only then he gives it over to his young children. Because there's a halacha called Das Acheres Makna, which means that the father could transfer over his ownership to his children, but the children, if they're ktanim, they're less than 13, they have no ability to transfer ownership back. They can acquire ownership, but they can't pass over the ownership to the father. In any event, we see from that sugya that the children also need to make a kinyan on the esrog. And once having done so, in the case of a katan, as we said before, there's no way that they can transfer the ownership back to the father. Whereas according to the Aruch HaShulchan, it seems like he has a possibility that you don't need to acquire ownership because you come from this magical entity called the Bayis, the Bnei Beisa. He wants to suggest the following. Now again, if you happen to have the text in front of you, we are now on page 10, and he says the following. V'niril etaretz, it's the third paragraph on page 10. Af ha'aruch ha'shulchan tzovet tzorech lahaknos l'bnei ha'bayis, el desfile dechol ha'kone esro kono so'al das she'yeh l'kulom. He says, no doubt the Aruch HaShulchan would not deny that each member of the household has to acquire his own personal ownership on the Dalad Minim. But the Aruch HaShulchan means something else. And that is that at the moment that the father purchased the Dalad Minim, he had in mind that it should belong in a partnership to all the various members of the family. Each one should be able to fulfill the mitzvah of Dalad Minim if they don't have their own esrog. And each one, therefore, has a what we call a shutvis, a partial but a sufficient ownership in the Dalad Minim. That is an analysis of what we call Das Ha'av, if you're familiar with the term Umdana, which means that we evaluate what the father was thinking when he purchased the Dalad Minim, and perhaps on a deeper level, maybe not consciously, but subconsciously, we can attribute the following das to the father, that his understanding was that if my children will need the Dalad Minim, then I have them in mind with this kinyan, that I am now acquiring ownership not only on my own personal behalf, but on behalf of any members of my family who might need to acquire ownership over this lulav if they don't have their own lulav. And therefore he did what's called a kinyan meshicha al das kulam. And that operates with a principle called zachin li adam shelo befanav, that I can do something that's beneficial for you even without your agreement. So all the members of the family will benefit from the das ha'av when he has in mind to make this meshicha on their behalf. And therefore, they now all acquire ownership over the esrog, with the exception of his young children, because again, he doesn't have in mind his young child, because if he does so, then the child will have ownership which he cannot transfer back to his father. Okay, again, there are a lot of nuances here that have to be ironed out. But the bottom line is, let's get back to the case of the children. Their father, in the hospital, owns an esrog, and Hinebuch is in a state of comatose. He cannot transfer ownership over the lulav to his children. Nevertheless, according to the Aruch HaShulchan, they can fulfill their mitzvah of lulav by taking their father's lulav. And the reason for that is because this magical halacha that when the father acquired ownership and he made a kinyan meshicha on this dalad minim, he had in mind all the members of his household, that in event that they would need the Dalad Minim, they should also acquire ownership. And that works, as we said before, Midin Zachin. So that now that the father is in the hospital, and he can't use the Dalad Minim, any one of the members of the family who needs the Dalad Minim has Lachem, has ownership, by virtue of this deeper analysis, the umdana that the Das Ha'av was to acquire it on behalf of all the members of the family. But how, Rabosai, is this going to help us in the case of Shimon, who's a corona patient, and he wants to, pardon the expression, borrow the matzis of Reuven, because Reuven is comatose, when Shimon is not a member of Reuven's family? He's a total stranger. Even the Aruch HaShulchan, based upon whom we wanted to allow the members of the family to acquire ownership and use the Dalad Minim of the father, that magical halacha of the Aruch HaShulchan, that principle only applied to the members of the family. It did not apply to other people who are outside the family circle. And therefore, at this particular moment, in the development of the Chashukei Chemed, he has to now come up with another leap of faith to take the Aruch HaShulchan perhaps one step further and allow Shimon to fulfill his mitzvah matzah with the matzahs of Reuven. And for this, he quotes a Rambam. And this you'll see in the middle of page 10 if you happen to have the printout. The Rambam writes about a person who was nishtater, which means that he is not mentally capable or legally capable, according to halacha, of fulfilling the mitzvah of tzedakah, of giving charity. Because to give charity, you need that the owner will transfer his possession, his ownership, over to the poor people. So the Rambam has a big chiddush. And the Rambam says that the authority is vested in the hands of Beis Din, and the courts have a right to quote-unquote poskim olav tzedakah. They make a serious evaluation of this person's possessions, his property, his assets, and they decide based on that evaluation how much money he has to give to tzedakah. And the Kesef Mishnah says that how does this work? After all, in order to give tzedakah, you have to transfer ownership. There's got to be Toras Kinyanin. And it's very nice that Beis Din has decided that this man who's comatose should be giving such and such an amount of tzedakah, but he's a shota. And if he's a shota, then legally he doesn't have the ability to make this kinyan. Says the Kesef Mishnah, Nichale le'inish le'me'eved tzedakah b'mamone. Now that phrase, which I'll try to translate for you, is borrowed from a Gemara in Pesachim. There's only one problem. The Kesef Mishnah, and pardon just for pedagogic purposes, my use of the pejoric term, the Kesef Mishnah misquotes the Gemara in Pesachim. The Gemara in Pesachim says, Nichale le'inish le'me'evad mitzvah b'mamone. It doesn't say le'me'evad tzedakah b'mamone. It means the following. For example, let's say I own a pair of tefillin, and my tefillin are now sitting on the shtender in the middle of the shul, and I've already davened in the early minyan, so I don't need the tefillin right now. You come along, you don't have your tefillin. Again, I'm not paskining anything right now, so don't. But in theory, the Gemara in Pesachim says that if you don't have your tefillin, you can be yotze your mitzvah tefillin with my tefillin. How does that work? And the answer is, says the Gemara, Nichle le'inish le'me'evad mitzvah b'mamono. A person has a vested interest in his possessions being used for a mitzvah. There are very strict conditions. It means that he doesn't need the object. He's not going to lose anything if someone else uses it as a mitzvah. The person is going to replace the tefillin exactly the way he found it, etc., etc. But under those circumstances, he can use his tefillin. Now, that's okay. Tefillin does not require ownership. I can borrow your tefillin, and I can be yotzei my mitzvah tefillin with your tefillin. So if it's nichale l'inish l'mevid mitzvah b'mamone, let somebody, ploni almoni, fulfill his mitzvah tefillin. But the Kesef Mishnah, again misquoting the Gemara, says nichale l'inish l'mekayim tzedakah b'mamone. The Gemara never mentions tzedakah. Tzedakah requires kinyan. You have to transfer ownership. It's not like tefillin. It's, you know, you can't borrow tzedakah. Tzedakah means I have to give the money over to the aniyim. So this very perplexing Kesef Mishnah to explain the Rambam about why Beis Din is entitled to transfer money over to the aniyim in the case of a person who's a shota was explained by the Chassam Sofer. So just guess the history of it. You know, the Rambam lived 1,000 years ago, and the Kesef Mishnah lived 500 years ago, and the Chassam Sofer lived 150 years ago. We have this whole train. So the Chassam Sofer in the city of Prejburg, right, he says that the Kesef Mishnah was very careful about his language, and he deliberately used the language of Lema'evet Tzedakah B'mamono, and not Lema'evet Mitzvah B'mamono, because in order to fulfill the mitzvah of Tzedakah, we'd have to apply the principle of Nichle Linish Lema'evet Tzedakah B'mamono. And he says that there's no doubt that this leap of faith of the Kesef Mishnah to explain the Rambam is absolutely correct. That to the same extent a person would want his tefillin to be used by someone else, if at no loss to him, he would definitely want his mamon to be given as tzedakah. Again, whatever percentage we want to give for tzedakah. Why? Because of the principle called tzedakah tatzil mimavis, that the mitzvah of tzedakah has a certain skula power to it, that it could bring about salvation of a person. And certainly a person would want that mitzvah of tzedakah, the great mitzvah, to be done, to be accomplished with his possessions. that mitzvah tzedakah will work on behalf of this shote or whoever is chole in order to save him from a worse tragedy. Okay, so how does this help us? Says Rav Yitzchok Zilberstein, Al pizeh nireh, to be in your nenu, ilu haya bezdin michutz lebeis hacholim. We can imagine now that there's a bezdin made up of three great judges that are sitting right outside the hospital, where Reuven and Shimon are neighbors in the corona ward. Heim poskim tztaka al Reuven achole. They will decide how much Reuven, who's now in a comatose situation, ever should be giving to tztaka, and they're going to use that tztaka to buy matzahs. In other words, the matzah itself is now going to replace tztaka. And the ownership over the matzahs now is going to be transferred to Shimon. And in that way, Reuven will have this, hopefully, school of power of being saved from death. Very nice. A big chiddush here. Based on the Chasam Sofer's understanding of the Kesef Mishnah's understanding of the Rambam, if a person is ill, it's in his benefit for Beis Din to evaluate how much tzedakah he should be given, and Beis Din will transfer that money over to the Aniyim, because tzedakah tatzil mimavis nichle le'inish le'me'evit tzedakah b'mamone. Did you ever hear such a thing? I never heard such a thing. This is all brand new. It's radical for me. And now we're going to apply it one step further, and the tzedakah now is going to take on the form of matzahs, because as far as matzahs is concerned, Shimon is nevach an oni, right? I'm just filling in the missing blanks here, and Shimon doesn't have any wherewithal of getting access to matzahs, not in that corona ward. So his tzedakah that's coming from Reuven, yeah, but now what's the agency that allows for this transfer of ownership of poskin as tztaka? The matzahs now become tztaka. It's Beis Din. Now Beis Din has very far-reaching authority when it comes to dinei mamonos, right? That's called hefker Beis Din hefker. The Gemara in Yevamos derives this principle from psukim that Beis Din has power over mamon. Now how that works, I don't know. Usually we say hefker Beis Din hefker. Here we're going a step further and we're saying haknas Beis Din havi haknah. And Beis Din could actually take money out of your pocket and put it into his pocket. But guess what? I didn't find any dayanim, any Beis Din sitting outside of, pick your hospital, you know, Shari Tzedek or whatever hospital you want. He says, v'yem ein lefanenu Beis Din. Is now he quotes the Ritva. It's not enough that we started with a confusing, ambiguous Rambam, and then we went to a confusing, ambiguous Kesef Mishnah, and then a Gevaldige Chiddush of the Chasam Sofer, and then the Chashukei Chemed wants to apply this whole principle to the matzahs as a mitzvah tzedakah. Now he's got to add another element into the equation, because there's no Beis Din over here, and that's the Ritva. Says the Ritva that I need Beis Din in order to effectuate a transfer of ownership. But says the Ritva, the exception to that rule is food, edible, because Le'isa itself is a kinyan, and that's called Shinui. So imagine you own matzah and I eat the matzah. So I mentioned at the early part of our discussion, what happens if you invite me to your house? How is this matzah my matzah? I didn't make a kinyan before. Maybe I should come over to your house before Pesach and lift up the matzahs. That'd be the chumrah of the year. But we don't know of such a thing. Or, for example, a hospital patient. So they bring him matzahs. He didn't make a kinyan on the matzahs. So the Ritva says that Le'isa, which is otherwise known as a shinui, meaning when you chew up the matzah and you changed its state of being, it's no longer recognizable as matzah, that itself is a kinyan. Therefore, since if there would have been a bezdin, the bezdin would have been poskim as hatzdakah. The only problem is that we need the agency of bezdin to effectuate the kinyan. So the whole stage is set. We have nichalele inish lemeeved mitzdakah bimamona, that Reuven, in order to save his own life, he desperately needs tzedakah. We're going to convert that tzedakah to matzahs. And Shimon is going to eat Reuven's matzahs. The only problem is, okay, it's certainly not gezel. I mean, Shimon is not stealing the matzah because Reuven would want to transfer that matzah over to him as a mitzvah tzedakah to save his life. Tzedakah tatzil mimavis. But how does Shimon actually acquire ownership on the matzah? And the answer is, we're going to now invoke the principle of the Ritva. And the Ritva says that le'isa of matzah, when you chew the matzah, that itself is a kinyan. And he summarizes his conclusion here on page 11. And he says, binyanenu. He says, since now there's no avera here whatsoever on the part of Shimon to eat Reuven's matzahs, nor of us, we don't know how we supply the agency by which the kinyan will be effectuated to transfer ownership of the matzah from Reuven to Shimon. We're going to rely on the Ritva. And then he adds another variable to strengthen his position. And he says there's a halacha called avuda mimenu, which means that these matzahs after Pesach are really valueless. Again, it depends, you know, which bakery baked the matzahs. But anyway, let's assume that right now the value of the matzah is because of the mitzvah of matzah. So he says, this is in the second paragraph on page 11, he writes, HaMatzah Avuda, this matzah is lost in its present state. And he says, even if you'll tell me that the matzah is a very nice, tasty matzah, it still is valueless. Because that matzah is going to be destroyed because it's in a room which is in the ward of Corona. And Corona matzahs are not edible. That's what he claims. Ki machlas Corona imachla midabekes. It's a very infectious disease. Vegamim nishar ha-matzahs lemachar. And even if you would stay and remain, let the matzahs remain till tomorrow, not only will the time for mitzvahs matzah be pressed, but not only that, it would have no value on the market. And in that case, we can apply the principle of nichale l'ruvein l'me'evid mitzvah b'mamona. We can even perhaps circumvent the need for the Kesef Mishnah, because again, the Kesef Mishnah led us to the conclusion that you need a Bezdin. That was the Rambam that he tried to interpret. And we don't have a Bezdin. So he says, nay, let's go back to Nichalei Le'inish in the case of Matzis, Le'me'evid Mitzvah B'mamone. That's the Gemara in Psachit. And so it's in Reuven's interest to allow Shimon to eat the matzah. Well, wait a minute. If I know that you're going to take my tefillin and I'm not going to get back those tefillin, then we don't apply the principle of Nichalei Le'inish Le'me'evid Mitzvah B'mamone. But here in the case of matzah, no matter what the matzah is valueless, because tomorrow the matzah goes into the rubbish can, and it has no market value whatsoever. And therefore, he says we can apply the principle of nichalei l'inish l'me'evid mitzvah b'mamonei. We don't even have to come on to Bezdin. And he summarizes it in the third paragraph. He says, l'sikum, im yesh b'chutz mi Bezdin, mi Beit HaCholim gimel dayanu. If you have three judges sitting outside the Beit Cholim, I'm not sure what he means by that. I mean, the chances of that happening is next to zero. But maybe he means there's a Beis Din somewhere, and we'll call up the Beis Din Erev Pesach. And he says, Yifsok al Reuven Achole. He says they will paskin that Reuven, who's the Chole, will have to give these matzahs as tzedakah. L'Shimon Achole, b'tor tzedakah. And then it's gachav samachayim. It's a life force that will save Reuven's life. The gamim ain bezdin. If there is no bezdin, he says, then how do we effectuate the kinyan such that Shimon can be yotzei his mitzvah of matzah by eating these matzahs. He says Shimon bili isaso, he's invoking the Ritva. When he chews up the matzah, he makes a kinyan on the matzah b'shinui, and it'll be makayim the mitzvah of achilas matzah mishalachem, even if there's no bezdin. And if you'll argue, well, for the mitzvah of tzedakah, we need an evaluation of bezdin. The answer is no. We're going to apply the principle of nichalei linish lemevin mitzvah b'mamone, and these matzahs are valueless for Reuven tomorrow because it's going to be Corona matzahs. So this is going to be the great shiloh that's going to go down in history, in the halachic legacy of Corona, as the Corona matzah psak. And honestly, when I read the original shiloh, Eschatoi Ani Mazkir, I thought there's no way under the sun that Shimon can take Reuven's matzahs. And I am totally shooken up by this psak of Rav Zilberstein, honestly. But it only goes to prove that halacha works with its own modus vivendi, its own operational methodology, like we said last time. Who would think that I wouldn't give up Mila Bizmana on a Monday for the sake of Shimon getting Mila on Tuesday? You remember the case? Or the Soviets who don't allow the Jews to have tefillin, and this one tourist comes in, they're begging him for the tefillin for thousands of people, and he is giving up on one single day of tefillin. And Rav Zilberstein says, according to Allah, he doesn't do so. With a whole lumpus, if you remember our discussion last week, that the Soviet Jews are not, I shouldn't call them Soviet Jews because they're just the Jews of silence, but they are not obligated in the midst of tefillin. And Reuven's son has to be circumcised on a Monday. That's Shimon's problem if there's no Moel, and Shimon is potter from the midst of Mule. So again, I'm just giving you, it's a little bit, I'm talking to myself now, if you don't mind overhearing my conversation. I find that what I learned from Rav Zilberstein, that it's dangerous, Berzon, to come to your intuitive answer to a question without seeing the way the halacha works. Because now I'm 0-3. And in baseball, that's a strikeout. Because three shilas that I saw here, and in all three cases, I had the intuition, and his psak is exactly the opposite of... Joe, you wanted to say something before. I'm sorry, I just wanted to give you the whole picture. Okay. I know for some reason I'm having trouble hearing you. You may have to jack up the volume a little bit.
No, I'm having trouble here with exactly what was
the original question was that Reuven and Shimon are sharing a room in a Corona ward, and Reuven's relatives brought Reuven, let's say Erev Yontif, they brought him a box of the most beautiful matzahs, and Nebuch in the meantime, before Yontif, Reuven's situation went down, and he's now in a comatose state. There's no way, no how he's going to eat the matzahs. The question is, can Shimon, who had no one bringing matzahs, use the matzahs of Reuven? To me, it's an open shut question. Easter. I mean, how could he take Reuven's matzahs? You know.
And the idea
that's his premise. Again, keep in mind, Joe, that his psak halacha is built on two different levels. At level number one, we don't have to discuss the situation of the matzah tomorrow, because we have a bezdin out there, but he's worried about the absence of a bezdin, and therefore he introduces the other element into the equation, that it's like my barring your tefillin without permission, because these matzahs have no market value. And I think that's a pretty solid premise. I don't think you can sell these matzahs tomorrow in this situation. Again, there are different corona wards, but generally speaking, you know, we don't take food out of the corona ward. You know, that gets destroyed. You know, it's, you know, human saliva is perhaps the most effective method of transferring the infection from one person to the other. So, you know, you don't want to start with food. And by the way, in almost every country in the West, as far as I know, there are very strict rules, forgetting about corona, about food. You know, in a hospital situation, you would never feed food from one patient to another. I mean, what you do on your own, you want to give your you know, your fellow roommate, you know, you want to give him the you know, the Lakshinkugel because you're not in the mood, or what, you know, what you do on an airplane, for example, you know, you can, that's one thing. But according to the you know, I know this only because in the yeshiva we used to have someone collect the leftovers for Yad Eliezer, for poor people. Because we had tons and tons of leftovers. I mean, this is so true in the way we live today in the West. And according to the laws of the health department, it's absolutely prohibited. So we got away with it for a while, claiming that we didn't know the law, but then after a while we realized that, you know, they're going to shut us down if they find out that we're giving, you know, our leftovers to Yad Eliezer. Again, it's very painful to see tons of food get thrown out when there are poor people who could use it. Anyway, that's just on the side. Okay, now where do we want to go from here? What I'd like you to do is fast forward to page 12. And, you know, I call this the Corona Women's Lib, Shiloh. That's what I want to call it. Now, I don't know if the situation that he's describing is relevant to you wherever you are, Al Pnei Tevel. But it's very relevant to us in the Emek Learning Center. We don't have enough room, given the restrictions of how many people could daven inside. I'm not talking about outdoors for right now. To allow for both an Ezras Noshim and an Ezras HaNoshim. And for the last, how long is it since we reopened the shul? It's approximately 6 weeks, 8 weeks, I don't know exactly how long. We are very restricted in number of people. For a while it was, they gave us up to 22, then it went down to 19. Now it's hovering somewhere around 10. We're not doing so great here. I know the Canadians are doing much better here. But we're not, here in Israel, we're having some really rough moments here, what they call the second round. And when you're limited in space, the first to go is the Ezras Noshi. And the women are not invited to daven, and I'm not embarrassed to say this until after the tshuva again, then I'll be embarrassed, but the women are not invited to participate in davening in the Emek Learning Center. We need that space for the men. So this is male superiority, right? So this question is being debated to this very day. And Rav Zilberstein threw his lot into this whole discussion, this debate. And he writes that if we want to expand the number of men in the shul to Daven B'Tzibur in the Beis HaKnesses, we're going to have to tell the women to go home. And he says that that's not such a great takana, because the women won't be able to come to Daven, they won't be able to hear Kriyas HaTorah, and the women might be insulted. He says that might cause them agmas nefesh. So, keitzad yesh lenhog? What should we do? And he opens up his tshuva by quoting a letter from Rabbi Akiva Eiger 2 centuries ago, during the cholera epidemic. And I'll tell you the truth, it's mind-boggling to read this letter from Rabbi Akiva Eiger from 2 centuries ago. Because almost everything he says in this letter complies with the rules of the Ministry of Health here in Israel. It's wild. He says, Rabbi Akiva Eiger, which you'll see in the middle of page 12, Be'inyan HaTefila B'Beis HaKnesses L'Daiti. Again, there was no instruction from the health department. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger now is functioning not just as a rabbi, but as the representative of the health department. He says, L'dayti, kibbutz b'makom tzar eino nachon. It's unacceptable to have many people in a small area. Efshal l'spalil rakitos kitos. Small groups that are separated from one another. And be'erech tesvav anoshim. All told, 15 people. Interesting, because as I told you originally, here we were allowed around 20, then it went down to 10. He's got 15, 2 centuries ago. Not only that, he says, that there's going to have to be a separation of at least one seat between every two people. And I don't know what's going on with Canadian airlines. What's it called? Air Canada. But I know Delta and what's it called? United. They're all boasting that there'll be an empty seat between two people. This is Rabbi Kivega writing 2 centuries ago. Not only that, he says, Tzarich la'amid shomer me'apolis. He writes in Hebrew, polis. Lashgiach bazeh. He says, once we have our maximum, our capacity, then the police have to make sure that no one else comes in. I was fascinated by this letter of Rabbi Kivega. Then, he says the following. He has a whole list of recommendations about whether to eat inside the synagogue and other hygienic methods and measures that have to be taken. And then he closes the letter. We're going to go back to the middle of the letter in just a second because he's going to talk about the women folk and are they going to be invited to shul. But at the end of the letter he writes, Ha'ikar shalo lidog. Most important is that we should not be in a state of fear. Again, this is cholera. I don't know how many millions of people died during this epidemic. U'laharchik, he says, Harchok is not just one from the other, but laharchik kol mini atzvus. This sounds like it was written by a Bretzema Chassid. Make sure that all sadness is far, far distant from us. Anyway, now Rabbi Kivega, going back to the middle of his letter, during the cholera epidemic, he raises the question of Yomim Noraim, of the high holidays. And he says that we should be marchik harchokos during the high holidays because of the cholera epidemic. And he says that these harchokos, in terms of the capacity number and in terms of the separation, the distance between one and a person, apply to the Ezras Noshim no less than they apply to the Ezras Gvarim. And says Rav Zilberstein, it's crystal clear from Rabbi Kivega's writings that he was in a situation where he needed every last spot in the Beis HaKnesses, and yet the Ezras Noshim was up and running, was functional, full force. The Gama Noshim is Palu Bi Ezras Noshim. Then Rabbi Kivega writes in this letter that just like we have to appoint someone within the community to make sure that the rules are being fulfilled, and the distance and the number, etc., so too in the Ezras Noshim, there should be Gabaot. This is Rabbi Kivega 2 centuries ago. Gabaot. It's like we have Gaboim, we need Gabaot in the women's section. I mean, if that's not women's lib, I don't know what is. You know, I'm wondering which women would be candidates for that job of being gabaut, and whether or not they should be paid for their work. L'fakeach al sidrei ha'yeshiva b'ezras noshim. Now we're up to page 13, if you're following the text. And he writes that b'chol batei knesios, in all our synagogues, says Rabbi Kivega, hein b'ezras ha'noshim v'hein b'ezras noshim, he says that what do we do in both the Ezras HaNoshim and the Ezras Noshim? We're only going to allow less than or maximum half of the people to fit in. Which half of the men will not be invited to participate on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur? Which half of the women are not going to be invited? So Rabbi Kivega comes up with the following idea. Fascinating. He says that half of the community, men in the men's section, women in the women's section, will be invited for 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, the first and the second. And the other half of the community will be invited to the synagogue for Yom Kippur, night and day. So it's interesting. In Rabbi Kivega's framework, there's like a trade-off over here. You know, I'll give you one night of Yom Kippur, which is called Nidri night, for the sake of one day of Rosh, one morning of Rosh Hashanah. He doesn't go into detail about the nights. You know, what about the nights of Rosh Hashanah? You know, I want to come for my Riv on Rosh Hashanah. Then Rabbi Kivay gives a whole triage. Because if half of the community is going to be excluded, Lel Mazogin on Yom Kippur, is that going to be applied straight across the board? Says Rabbi Kivay, no, there's the Grivid, the Gaon of Bezdin, meaning the Rav of the Shul. There are Dayanim who are part of the community, Dayanim Kvuim. Then there's the Gabbai. And then he has something called Mishubadim de Beis HaKnesset. I have no clue what that means. If anybody will share their wisdom, I don't know what he means by that. Then he has Ha'omed L'Sgan. There's a person who is sort of like the overseer of all the operation, the whole Gabos. And the Balei Tefillah, the Balei Tekiah, B'Yomam. Again, you could have Reuven, who will blow the shofar on the first day of Rosh Hashanah, Shimon on the second. V'chein b'ezras noshim. And he says that the Rabbanit will get a place in the shul for both Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. V'gabaot. Remember, he has these gabaot. V'yishmeru amakomeyem. Makomosean, because it's feminine, Bein Rosh Hashanah, Bein Yom HaKippur. In any event, one thing is crystal clear from Rabbi Kivega. They did not exclude the women from the Ezras Nosh. And at this point, again, when you learn Rabbi Yitzhak Zilberstein, you always have to take a pause at some point and sit back and say, well, what would be the conclusion? And there's no question about it that the conclusion that we should draw at this point would be, hands down, based on Rabbi Kivega, that the Noshim have rights to the Ezras Noshim, and we cannot remove them from those rights. Because Rabbi Kivega is addressing the case of the cholera epidemic, and every last seat in the house is necessary. We're talking about Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and the Ezras Noshim is in full force. The only difference is that half of the women will not be invited, so we'll make a trade-off as we discussed. Says Rav Zilberstein, I would have stopped here, except for Rav Shach of Ponovich. Now Rav Shach was the Rosh Yeshiva way before Corona. And to the best of my knowledge, there were no epidemics during the period of Rav Shach's Rosh Yeshivaship in Ponovich. But they had a worse problem. Every Rosh Hashanah and every Yom Kippur, they couldn't fit everyone into the shul in the Ponovich yeshiva. Today Ponovich is a little bit larger. It's a little bit more complicated what goes on today in Ponovich. I won't go into detail now. But be that as it may, at the time of Rav Shach, now you have to keep in mind, Rabbi Osai, he doesn't mention it here, but the graduates of Ponovich would gravitate to the yeshiva on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So there was a vad, some sort of committee, and they raised the following possibility. Let's get rid of the Ezras Noshim in Ponovich for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, and let's take over the Ezras Noshim, and that will, I'll just use this word arbitrarily, double the space in the shul. But the members of the community say we can't do it without the okay of Rav Shach. Rav Shach said, give me a few days to think about it. Apparently, he wasn't happy about this idea that the women would not be invited to daven in the great Ponovich yeshiva on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. Says Rav Shach, I'm not going to allow it. He comes out of hibernation after 2-3 days, and the answer is no. And he says the following. Again, I'm going to quote it. He probably said it in Yiddish. This is probably a translation to him. Bona secheshbon. Who are the women who come to daven on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? He says, the women who have young children, they can't make it to shul. They have to take care of their children. Who comes from the women folk to daven on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur? He says, they're either one of three categories. Either women who never lo zachu lipakeid bezera shel kayama, women who have no children, married women. Oh, second category, ravakot mevugarot. Okay, keep in mind, 5 o'clock on our clock, 10 a.m. on your clock, right? To daven 4 chapters of Tillim on behalf of the Ravakot and the Ravakim, because today is Tu B'Av. And the third category, he says, is Noshim Mivugarot, older women. He says, HaTfila Shalahen, their prayers, Hein Shvuros Halev Legamri, they are broken in their hearts. The hatfilos bos mitoch halev, it's coming from the heart. Uminastam, I get emotional when I read this. Hey, mozilos dmos kemayim betfiloso. You know, I've come to the point in my life where I'm very cynical. I don't hear a single cry from where I stand on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. I remember there was one Yom Kippur that I davened in Lakewood Yeshiva. I mean, I was a youngster at that time. Then maybe there were 500 guys in the yeshiva. Today, I don't know, there are 5,000 guys in the yeshiva. I don't know. And I remember when they got to Arzei Alevanon, one fellow starts crying. The entire yeshiva was crying. It was like an automatic spread. Imagine 500 yeshiva guys crying during Arzei Alevanon, you know, the Aruge Malchus. But I honestly, I became very cynical. You know, Chazal speaks so much about the tears of a mispalel. Says Rav Shach, where are these tears coming from? They're coming from the Ezra's Noshim. Umesugolos lavkia shomayim. It is their tears that can break through and tear through the heavenly courts and save us. Kol ha-yeshiva shalonu zkuka l'tfilos halolu. Our yeshiva desperately needs the prayers of the women. The Ketzad Efsha Lemonam Milavo, how can we prevent them from coming? That's why I call this the Women's Lib Corona Shaila. Because look at how a Rosh Yeshiva of a Lithuanian yeshiva, I don't know if you've ever seen a picture of Shach, you know, he's got the whole garb, you know, the pay is coming out here and there, and he's telling us that if we want to succeed on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we desperately need the women folk to come to shul. And again, like we saw earlier in Rabbi Kivega, lo bitlu es ezras hanoshim, even if it meant that men would not be able to come to the shul because there's not enough room. Once again, Rabbi Osai, I'm at the point where my intuition tells me that I can guess exactly what Rav Zilberstein would say about the Amic Learning Center. Don't you dare exclude the women folk. And he comes to just the opposite conclusion. Achei nirish yesh chiluk gadol bein ha-mikrim elu ledini donenu. He says Rav Shach is talking about the Ezras Noshim during Yomim Noroim. Who comes to shul on Yomim Noroim? It's these broken-hearted women who need to cry. They need to be inspired. And on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they are inspired. They hear the Slichos and the Yud Gimel Midas Arachamim and all the Piyutim. And this puts them into the uplifting state of Bechi, of crying. Their tears, their dmos, will tear through the Rakia. Abel Betfilo Shel Kol Hashanah says, which women come to shul during the rest of the year? Any women that could possibly come to shul. Kol shem istader lo magil tefila. If it works out that they can come to shul, they'll get a babysitter. They may have children. Do we then insist that the women have a zchus? That the women have to come? And they get the Ezras Noshim, and therefore lidchos es hagvar milis palel, we should exclude the men? And he says that the Trumas HaDeshen, quoted by the Ramah, for women who very often are inhibited about coming to shul, let's say a woman is in a state of uncleanliness, she doesn't want to come to shul, But during Yom Noraim, she should come to shul 3 days out of the year. She should forget about the fact that she's a nida. She should come to shul without any compunctions, without any inhibitions. And the reason for that is because on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, there's such an inspiration. Their tefillos are so important, they're so tahoros, and that's chus we need on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. So a woman should not feel in any way, maybe I don't want to go to shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. However, the rest of the year, that's a different story. So how does Rav Zilberstein wrap this all up? And Rav Osei, again, I apologize if I spend too much time on this for your taste, but I am absolutely fascinated by this. I mean, this to me is like great stuff. I mean, I live on this. It's like the oxygen I breathe on. He says, Yesh keilu shetanu, there are those in the different camps, you know, one of the camps of the controversy, say, Yesh litchos bevade, we should reject the women for the sake of the men. And what's the big deal if women won't come to shul, let them daven at home? Mi Omar, who says that the Noshim have to come to shul during the course of the year? Okay, Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur is different. They have a schus to come. We're going to allow the women to come, but we don't have to therefore undermine the possibility for men to therefore come to shul. That's one school of thought. But then there are others who quoted another letter. Again, this letter has nothing to do with neither corona nor cholera. That's a letter from the Gaon, the Vilna Gaon. He writes to his wife that our daughter should not go to shul. Why? Because in the Ezra's Noshim, there's a certain amount of jealousy. Women are dressed, you know, the rich women are dressed fancy. They're wearing jewelry or something. And that's going to cause our daughter to be jealous. And not only that, there's a lot of schmoozing going on in the women's section. And maybe they'll come to speak Dvarim Asurim and Lashon Hara. And therefore, with regard to our daughter, let's apply the principle called Kvod Bas Melech Pnima. So the Gaon in his letter discourages sending the girl to shul. So those who are in favor of the Ezra's Noshim, even during Corona, they claim that the Gaon is only saying this to his daughter. But as far as his wife is concerned, he didn't tell his wife not to come to shul. He told his wife to come to shul, do your thing, daven, don't get involved in looking here and looking there with all the jealousy and the fancy clothes. Be very careful not to speak or hear Lashon Hara. But certainly, he encouraged his wife to go to shul. But the premise is that there's an Ezra's Noshim, and his wife has a right to the Ezra's Noshim. And therefore, Rav Zilberstein says that you can summarize the anti-women with three principles. Principle number one is that back in the day, I don't know exactly how many years ago, there was no such thing as an Ezra's Noshim. Again, Rav Osei, I don't know the history of it. Please Google this and maybe you'll find out when was the first. I know I have a painting here in my living room of the Prague Shul. And this painting has got to be again, the painting is not 100 years old. But I mean, the Prague Shul is much more. It's called the Lekloi Shul. It's one of the five shuls the Nazis, Yimach Shemam, left in the city of Prague as the so-called museum. What did he call it? You know, Hitler wanted to have a museum of a nation that once existed. So he left five synagogues in Prague. So one of them is called the Klois Shul. So I have a beautiful rendition of an artist of the Klois Shul. I was in the Klois Shul myself. And there's a beautiful Ezra's Noshim. I can't believe it's recent. But in any event, so at some point in history, they claim there was no such thing as an Ezra's Noshim. So why should we now create an Ezra's Noshim? Number two, you know what? The women are going to start looking at the men are going to look at the women. And point number three is that maybe there's noise in the Ezra's Noshim and it's going to interfere with the tefillah, the drasha, the rav, and so forth and so on. The pro Ezra's Noshim argue 3 points corresponding to the 3 points of the anti. Number one, just because there wasn't an Ezris Noshim back in the day, that doesn't mean therefore there can't be an Ezris Noshim. So they didn't have an Ezris Noshim. We have an Ezris Noshim. Number two, as far as the men looking at the women and vice versa, so there are ways of solving that problem. We have Vilonot, and we can have Atumim, you know, one-way mirrors, a Chesvos, I don't know what he has in mind here. Number three, as far as the Rash is concerned, then that's the job of the Gaboim, or the Gabaot, you know, to make sure that the women are orderly and quiet. And again, I can testify for myself, and if my father were alive, he would say the same thing, that the women, when the drush is given, they hang on to every single word. A couple of men are falling asleep. You know. In any event, what's the deal with an Ezris Noshim? So again, I see we're running out of time, so I'll just summarize. On page 15, he quotes a tshuva of the Bris Yaakov, who lived about maybe 150 years ago in the city of Varsha. His name was Rav Baruch Mordechai Lifshitz. And he has a diuk in the Rambam. The Rambam opens up the 11th chapter of Hilchas Tefillah, and it says, "Kol Mokom Sheyesh Bo Asara MiYisrael is Tzorach." Any town or community or village that has 10 men is Tzorach LaHachin Lo Beis HaKnesses. They have to establish a synagogue LeTefillah B'Chol Eis Tefillah. The Mokum Zenikra Beis HaKnesses. My Rebbe Rav Salvechik has a lot of diukim, a lot of chidushim on this Rambam. Anyway, we're interested now in the diuk, the great diuk of the Bris Yaakov. Kofin b'nei ha'ir zel zeh. We can force the members of the town to shell out to build a Beis HaKnesses. V'liknos lahem, they should buy for themselves a Sefer Torah. Nevi'im, ksuvim, right? We need Nevi'im to read the Haftorah. We need Ksuvim to read during the various holidays, to read the five Megillos. Says the Bris Yaakov, take a look. The Rambam sets up a precondition for Kfiya, that you need 10 men. And obviously because 10 men are obligated in what's called Tefillah B'Tzibur, you can't just daven at home. He says the women are not obligated in Tefillah B'Tzibur, and therefore, we're not going to force building. So let's say, for example, we have a building fund, correct? Right, I think in the Adas Shul, right, in the Clanton Park Shul, they had a fund. Didn't they raise money after that flood to rebuild the shul? I don't know, I can just tell you that when I visited the shul more recently, in the last couple of years, I didn't even recognize the shul. And if you go to down south, Rabbi Strachler Shul, what's it called? Shomrei Shabbos. Shari Shemayim. Who could recognize Shari Shemayim today? The gates of heaven don't look like they used to look. Okay, so how much money do we have to raise? Do we have to raise enough for a separate wing for an Ezris Noshim? You know, that could double the size of the shul. So the Bris Yaakov says that the Rambam has the din of kfiya to force the members of the community to build a shul for the sake of Asara Gvarim, for 10 men who have a chiyuv of Tefillah B'Tzibur. He says, nay, that's not what the Rambam has in mind. The Rambam says that we will force the members of the community to buy ksuvim. Ksuvim, for the Chamesh Megillos, does not require a Tzibur. So you see that the Rambam's vision of a Beis HaKnesses is not built on the requirement of a tzibur, because otherwise the Rambam would not force us to purchase ksuvim. I don't know, does the Clanton Park Shul have ksuvim? Do they? Yeah, they read from a Megillah? Here in Eretz Yisrael, because the influence of the Gaon, you know, it's like people go mad, you know, to have all the five Megillahs written. It's like Yeharigvel Yavar. But I don't know, in America, in my father's shul, I don't think they had Megillos. You know, my father would read it in front of the tzibur out of a chumash, you know. But things have gotten more frum over the years. So today, you know, we have ksuvim from a klav. And the Rambam requires that we purchase ksuvim, says the Bris Yaakov. That's not a chiv tzibur. Therefore, the halacha of Asara here, that's not because of Tefillah B'Tzibur. Asara means we have enough men to form a city, and every city has to be equipped with a synagogue. In fact, he says that Nevi'im are read in the Haftorah. You don't even need Asorah for Nevi'im, for the Haftorah. Right, that you have to know more about Haftorah. But he says, therefore, the Rambam's kfiya to force the building of a synagogue in a town that has Asorah is a reflection not of Tefillah Bitzibur, but rather of Tefillah, and for that matter, of Torah. Guess what? Women are obligated in Tefillah no less than men. That's a Gemara in Brachos Daf Chaf. Right? Tefillah Rachmehu v'noshim boy Rachme. Is Memela, the Bris Yaakov comes to the conclusion that we will force the community to build not just an Ezras Gvarim, but also an Ezras Noshim. And he goes on to quote a Gemara in Sota. The Gemara in Sota talks about a story of an almana, of a widow, and she was not davening in her local shul, in her neighborhood. She would walk to a different shul, and Rebbe asked her, why do you walk to another shul? Is it that you want to get schar, you know, psios or whatever? But anyway, the Gemara there assumes that she was definitely davening in a shul. Now, if she was davening in a shul, there must have been an Ezras Noshim. And the Bris Yaakov goes on and on to prove that there is an institution called an Ezras Noshim, and the women have rights to an Ezras Noshim based on the fact that they are Chayovas B'Tefillah. And therefore, Rav Zilberstein in page 16, he says that L'chora, it would seem, getting back to Yonenu, Shekvar hoyel enoshim makom b'ezris noshim, the women have a place in the Ezris Noshim, and in every synagogue on the face of the earth, the women have a place in the Ezris Noshim. V'halokach mihem es ha-makom, if you take away their place in the Ezris Noshim, ha-reze monea, Milasos mitzvah, you are preventing them from fulfilling that mitzvah. V'ein lanu rishus lokachas es ha-ezres noshim mehanoshim. Now there's more to this tshuva which we don't have time for now, so I reserve my rights to finish this up at the end, because at the end on page 17 he summarizes and he says that in Tfilas Yomim Noraim, which is around the corner for us, he says there's no question we have to guarantee space for the women. L'spalel v'lizok v'livkos l'fnei Hashem in the Ezras Noshim. However, v'shar yamos hashana, he says, he vacillates back and forth. On the one hand, he says the men are obligated in tefillah b'tzibur, the women don't have the obligation of women b'tzibur, maybe therefore the men come before the women. But on the other hand, we have this tshuva from the Bris Yaakov, to the effect that women have rights to the Ezras Noshim, and they can force us to build an Ezras Noshim, and therefore we cannot remove them from the Ezras Noshim. So we'll just, in Mirtz Hashem, if we have time next week, we'll just wrap that up, and I'm waiting for the next edition. I told David that we're waiting for the next Omek HaPshat, but it hasn't come out yet, as far as I can tell, for Parshas Ekev. So we'll have to wait for that. So this is where we'll stop.
Yom Narayim, right? It says there's women who are married and don't have children. There's older ladies, and there's the third class of.
Let's go over the three groups. There's one group of women who are married, never don't have children.
Right.
There are women who have older children, and then there are ravakot. There are single women. And they don't have children.
Right, so my question is, I understand two of them, but the older women, like, what is it they're in such a need for? The single women
for that, David, you have to learn today's Daf Yomi and Masechet Shabbos. And if you learn the Daf Yomi, you'll know that old age is a time of tzoros and it requires special bakoshos, meaning the obligation to daven be'es tzara is very, very profound for an older person. The Gemara goes into detail based on a perek in Koheles, Perek Yud Beis, about all the trials and travails of older age and why a person has to cry in front of Hashem specifically during old age. So the older women You'll notice that older women, when they come to shul on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, they have a tendency of breaking out in tears. You know, older people are very sensitive, and that's why they're crying. And we need those tears very badly. And that's the Chiddush of Rav Shach. Efshar, he writes, Rav Zilberstein, D'yesh lidchos araya midivrei HaBris Yaakov. Maybe the situation that was addressed by the Bris Yaakov is not analogous to our situation, because B'toch Devarav, in the presentation, in the tshuva, the Bris Yaakov is a collection of his tshuvas on Aruch Chaim and other chalokim of Shulchan Aruch, he explains, why is it that we have no legal rights, according to Halacha, to prevent the establishment of an Ezras Noshim? He says that that is tantamount to being Moner Rabbi Lasos Mitzvah. We are preventing an entire group of Klal Yisrael from fulfilling their mitzvah, because if they don't come to the shul, the women will probably not daven at all, and they are obligated in davening. Therefore, we cannot do anything that might cause and prevent them from fulfilling their mitzvah. He says, this Rabbi Zilberstein calls Zedira be a mayhem. Why? Because the education for women back in that, in those days, they didn't have Beis Yaakov. He's describing a Varsha, you know, of 150 years ago. This is before Tzener, you know, all they had was Tzenereta. I'm just adding that. And he says they didn't have Sfarim, they didn't have Sidurim, they weren't clear Sidurim, they were manuscript Sidurim. Today, every girl goes to a Beis Yaakov. She is raised with Tefillah. She gets a beautiful Siddur as a gift. And the Metzius is, he says, that women will daven in their homes even if they don't come to shul. And therefore, if the logic that compels the Bris Yaakov to conclude that we don't have the rights to take away the women from the shul is because they won't daven at all, and we're in effect being monea them the mitzvah of tefillah which they're obligated in, that logic would not necessarily be compelling today when the women are more educated and they are more oriented towards davening. So then we can assume that everyone will daven, men and women, even without the shul. But in the case of men, they have an additional chiyuv of davening b'tzibur, which is not a chiyuv shared by the women. And therefore, maybe we should give preference to the men because of their chiyuv and their mitzvah of tefillah b'tzibur, which is not shared by the women folk. He says, "Mashiyesh lodun hu shafilum nekabel es hachilu kanal." And we would say that Biyomenu, maybe we don't have to force the issue of an Ezras Noshim, that the women have to absolutely be guaranteed an Ezras Noshim, let them daven at home. He says, that may be true, lechatchila, that we cannot force the issue of an Ezras Noshim. But once the Ezras Noshim is up and running, it exists, then we don't have a schus to rob the women of the Ezras Noshim. And we'll apply the principle of Ein Dochen Nefesh Bifnei Nefesh. You know, the men want the Ezras Noshim now for their davening, and the women have rights to the Ezras Noshim. And how could we be Dochen Nefesh Bifnei Nefesh? The Mokom now is already established as Shayach LeNoshim. It's one thing when you want to deal, as the Bris Yaakov addressed the question of building an Ezras Noshim and whether we can force the community to pay for an Ezras Noshim. It's another thing when there's already a given, the facts on the ground are such that there already is an Ezras Noshim. But he still maintains that perhaps that Lechatchila, when they built the Beis HaKnesses and they built it B'Ravchus, which with enough room for both the men and the women, but everything was done al das, that there would be enough room for the men. And even when they built the Ezras Noshim, they had in mind that the Ezras Noshim is fine and dandy, it's a wonderful luxury item, but it's not critical, and what is critical, that there be enough room for the menfolk. And certainly the men would get kedima to the women, they get first triage. Why? Because their priority is based on the chiyuv tefillah b'tzibur that women don't share. And in addition, he claims that with regard to this din of kofin zeh, we force one another to build a Beis HaKnesses, there's a shibud al kol echad v'echad b'bnei ha'ir, lidok shia Beis HaKnesses likulam, and mikaven shehelenu tzad rachok shekayom lo kofin livnos, even though there is an outside possibility that maybe we cannot force the building of an Ezras Noshim in our collection of funds, and at least that is true for the whole year round. I'm not sure about Yomim Noraim. Anyway, maybe Yesh Lichvosas HaNoshim, maybe the women also have to participate financially in building a makom tefillah, not only on their behalf, but also for the men. There's a general chiyuv. And add to boot that a married woman is Meshubedis Labaila, so she has a shibud in mominous terms to build a makom for the Beis HaKnesses. And Ala Isha Lidog Labaila, every woman has to worry about and be careful about supplying a makom tefillah for her husband who is obligated to daven betzibur in the shul. And he says the following, that with regard to Yomim Noraim, it's going to be very difficult halachically to rob the women of their place in the shul. However, during the rest of the year, perhaps we could do whatever we can to placate the women. We certainly should write notes and indicate that if we are replacing the women, we apologize for doing so. We ask the Noshim Tzidkonios, the righteous women, B'loshan Adina, in a very sensitive way, that based on the very unusual, extreme circumstances, the situation that we're facing today, the women should be willing to forego their rights to the Ezras Noshim, and there should be extra room in the Ezras Noshim for the men to daven, and to do whatever we can to allow the women to participate in a way that we don't undermine the possibility for the men to daven b'tzibur. So you get the impression that at the end of the day, although Rav Zilberstein was the one who quoted this Bris Yaakov, and nevertheless he thinks that maybe the Bris Yaakov doesn't apply head on to our situation. Again, you know, there is this argument that the women already have a zchus to the Ezras Noshim. It's, you know, it's a given. So it's not just a halacha of, you know, lechatchila from the get-go forcing the hands of the community to build an Ezras Noshim, but they already have an Ezras Noshim that's up and running. Unless we assume that the Ezras Noshim was built with a das, with a condition that if necessary and there's not enough room for the men, then that Ezras Noshim should be viewed as an integral part of the Heichal of the Beis HaKnesses that's designated for the men. And again, if there's a priority to the men, it's only because they have a chiyuv of tefillah b'tzibur. Now, I just want to add with a nun bet, you know, with a postscript on my part, P.S., now that many communities have tefillah b'tzibur outside the shul, the issue here becomes a little bit more obfuscated, a little bit less clear and absolute. You know, you're saying that the men have priority because of the chiyuv tefillah b'tzibur, which I grant, that's absolutely true, but can the men fulfill their mitzvah of tefillah b'tzibur outside the shul, leaving room inside the shul for the Ezras Noshim? And the Ezras Noshim, you might argue, could daven outside the shul, but on the other hand, they are very inspired by the shul, and perhaps by the Torah and the drasha and the shirim that go on in the shul. So it still remains in my mind a complicated issue, and every Rav has to decide for his community, but certainly the upshot of Rav Zilberstein in the case of Yom Noraim is that we have a serious need for the women to be there during the Yomim Noraim. Okay, Amir Hashem, we've gotten up to page 17 in the Tshuvos of the Chashukei Chemed of Rav Zilberstein. Perhaps we'll have a chance and opportunity to continue with that next week. I wish you all well, and I have a happy Tu B'Av.